Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impoga. This evening we'll talk about elections in Africa during 2016. And with us tonight is my colleague here, Ayotunde Balogun. He's from Channels TV in Lagos, but he's with me in the studio here in Washington. Welcome to the show again, Ayotunde.
Thank you so much, Douglas. It's great to be here again.
You're welcome. Also joining us by phone is Mohammed Ademo. He's a founder and editor-in-chief of opride.com. Mohammed, welcome to the show once again.
Thank you for having me. Thanks, Douglas.
You're welcome. And joining us from Durban, South Africa, is regular panelist Suleiman Mugula. He's an independent political analyst. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas, and thank you for inviting me too.
You're welcome. How is Durban?
Durban is fine. It's warm.
Good, good, good. Now, as I said, gentlemen, tonight we're talking about elections in Africa. There have been several elections this year. By this year, I mean 2016. And some of them have been run very well, some have been not so well, some have been weird. So why don't we start from the most weird in Gambia. Gambia in December held elections. Yahya Jammeh conceded defeat. A week later, he said, no, once again, he changed his mind and called for a re-election. So, first of all, Mohammed, what's your take on that kind of gymnastics in elections?
I think we should not be very surprised. You know, after all, Jammeh has been in power for close to three decades and has built a country that is so repressive and so reclusive. But, you know, one thing remarkable, I thought, that has not been getting a lot of play is just the fact that there was a lot of passion and enthusiasm with the results, and the fact that he came on a national TV and promised to step down. And I think the opposition and the activists got a little bit too excited and started talking about the ICC, started talking about looking into some of his abuses, and started talking about looking into his finances. And I suspect that this has something to do with his change your mind. And, you know, I don't mean to blame the Gambians and the opposition in this case, but I think it is reflective of the fact that democracy is not so developed in that country, and it was fragile. It was almost too good to be true that he would stand down willingly after being at the helm for so long. And, you know, he's a very interesting figure who promises to cure AIDS and he makes all kinds of outlandish claims.
Yes.
So it is a very interesting case to continue to watch. And I know that the regional powers in the African Union are trying to urge him to honor his words. And in the almost global response is unanimous and overwhelming. And it will be interesting if he clings to power, and if he does, I think we are going to see a very bloody situation. And I hope that won't happen, and I hope that the regional powers could sway him to honor his commitment. And hopefully the opposition has learned, not just in the Gambia, but in other places, in repressive countries, not to go overboard with pronouncement and what you are about to do before you come to power, and you ensure that your hold on power is cemented, because, you know, it's fragile, it is not developed.
I see. Ayotunde, this was quite the opposite of what happened in nearby Ghana, where Mahama lost, conceded, the new guy is going to come in.
Nana Akufo-Addo.
Yeah. After several attempts, son of a former president, at least this time there was no chaos there compared to Gambia.
Absolutely true. I think this just goes to show that, you know, in some parts of Africa, yes, you know, some of these countries have been able to embrace, you know, the tenets of what the ideals of democracy are really, you know, you lose an election, you know it's the right thing to accept the defeat regardless of what the outcome is. Yes, you may have some issues here and there, but, you know, the people come first. The country comes first. You need peace and stability. And I think that's what played out in Ghana. And but I was quite surprised, really, that Mahama would lose the election. I mean, I think he did quite a lot to, you know, gather enough support, you know, from Ghanaians. But, you know, the wind of change, it just keeps blowing. And, it, you know, you never know where it's gonna come next. And for Ghana, it's quite historic. And for Nana Akufo-Addo, I know he has a whole lot of work on his hands. So it's quite remarkable.
Yeah. Now, Suleiman, we have here Jamal playing his gymnastics. We have Mahama conceding defeat. Then we have earlier in the year, in 2016, we had in February, we had in Uganda. For them, the playbook was different. Lock up the opponent, keep him under house arrest, beat him up, do whatever you can. So there's no room for even when the elections, the results are controlled and the incumbent announces the results, controls the results. That's a different playbook.
Yeah. Actually, you have put it nicely that we have got two groups on the continent. We have got the Yaya Jammeh, the Musevenis. The question of Yaya Jammeh is almost like a miracle that happened for him to be able to accept the results. Otherwise, we are going to wind up the year with a normal group. We have got the Rogue group, which is in its own class with a 19th century and 20th century mentality, whereby they feel that once you have got the instruments of coercion, the instruments of authority, the killing instruments, you are free to rule until when you die. The question of Gambia, the question of Yaya Jammeh was only a miracle. Otherwise, what happened in Gambia was what happened in Uganda, in Congo Republic. We have got another Denis Ngweso. We have got Idris Deby. We have got Theodore Obiang Nguema. We have got Mohamed Issoufou in Niger. All of them are the same. We have got Bongo, Nyasinde is coming. It is the same characteristic. They don't know where they are. They are in the 19th and 20th century. They have never realized that the world has changed. Even Africa has changed. We have got some good areas in Africa. We have got some good countries which have progressed, as you have already noted. Ghana has progressed. We had Nigeria last year. We had Ivory Coast. And the benefits are obvious. You can see change in those particular countries as compared to your Gambia, as compared to your Uganda, as compared to your Ethiopia, as compared to your Congo Republic, Equatorial Guinea, which are stagnating, which have got no direction whatsoever. So it is a mix, but God only helped us to focus on Gambia, to again conscientize or again to alert the people that we still have a long way to go on the continent. The Rogue regime are still alive.
May I say something here? You know, I really agree with what the speaker has said in totality. But again, I ask this question. I mean, let's look at it, you know, in a more deeper light. I mean, some of those countries that you talked about, some of these presidents, you know, incumbent presidents who just refuse to accept results when it doesn't go for them and they're asked to leave power. But don't you think there's a bigger picture, I mean, some kind of a bigger force that is playing out in some of these countries, why you know, some of these leaders really wouldn't want to accept the outcome of the result. I mean, external factors, some countries, you know, where they seem to be enjoying huge support and we just want to perpetrate them, you know, keep them in power and have themselves perpetrated in power. And, you know, that for me is another big challenge that we really have to sit down and take a look at, because it is a problem. We can't rule out that fact.
So Mohamed, following up on these two guys, gentlemen's contributions, there are those leaders who laws or are near losing, and they want to dispute the elections. But there's another subset of leaders who don't allow the opposition any chance of ever winning. Take a country like Ethiopia, take Rwanda, take Uganda to some extent. At least in Gambia, the opposition came. They were not, well, there were some beatings and jailings before that. But eventually, Jammeh allowed them to compete, and the votes were counted openly, and he lost. But at least there's that step ahead. There are those countries where you can't have free open counting, where you can't have the opposition leader campaign or have airtime on radio or television. So it's a mishmash of these. There are different degrees of fake elections on the continent.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it is a mixed bag, right, across the continent. You see Ghana, which I think I would say continues to be the bright spot in Africa, in Africa's potential and also promise in the future, where, you know, as my colleague said, Mahama has done really good things in the country in terms of infrastructure and other things. But at the end of the day, it came down to the economy, and I think from the U.S. to Ghana in elections, in Brexit, in the Great Britain, the economy continues to be the biggest driver in the 2016 elections. And it seems like the drop in the price of oil, gold, and some of other minerals, we're not on the side of Mahama at this point in the populist message of the opposition won. But when you look at the other side of the continent, East Africa, you know, we had election in Djibouti earlier this year, where Gule was elected to fifth term after kicking out journalists from the BBC and obviously allowing some semblance of opposition, but the opposition is weak. And, you know, farther south, you have Ethiopia, which follows a very different system altogether. They follow a developmental state policy where you need a strong party, strong leader to help the economy take off, because democracy and other things can wait. And, you know, up north in Eritrea, the leader there refuses to hold elections and continues to say that the Eritrean people don't need elections. That's not our priority. The priority is to feed our people. And, you know, you have Museveni, who's been in power until since 1980. So they allow a semblance of opposition because it is just impossible to have one party rule in the sort of proverbial African big man in the mold of Idi Amin in this day and age, because you have to pretend that you are a democracy, you have to pretend that you are holding periodic elections, which is just one aspect of democracy. It helps them outwardly, because these countries, some of them are accountable to foreigners, and they have dealings with foreign companies, they have dealings with foreign countries.
Exactly.
But you have people like Kagame, who are still very much powerful and ever-present, but they still have to continue to say that we are a democracy. And I agree that it is a mixed bag. And I'm interested to see what happens in 2018 in Kenya, which is likely going to be one of the biggest elections to watch.
Suleiman.
Yeah. Douglas and my colleagues, for those leaders who have stayed over 10 years, to date, there is no justification whatsoever why they continue to manipulate, to intimidate, to show fake democracy. I have not seen any reason why many of these leaders are staying more than 10 years. Yahya Jammeh, Kabila, Museveni, Nyasimbe, Idris Deby, Salva Kiir, Nguesso, what do they have in particular which is so special? Intellectually, academically, experience-wise, administratively, what have they done which is so extraordinary to warrant them to be in the country for more than 10 years. Are they academically superior to the other people in the country? As my colleague has said, I'm an admirer of Mahama. Quite an accomplished guy, very well educated, polished guy. I think he's, to me, he gave the best speech in the United Nations, the last General Assembly,
mm-hmm.
as far as the Africans were concerned. Very well articulated, very well focused. I admired Mahama, and I feel he was one of the best leaders on the continent. But he has been defeated because after 8 years, the country needs a change. And they are not replacing him with the likes of Museveni, with the likes of Yahya Jammeh, who only have one degree with no experience whatsoever, and they are just camouflaging as good leaders. They are replacing him with a man of experience, mm-hmm. an academician, a civil servant, who will take it on the next level, the way it was done in Ivory Coast. Today, Ivory Coast is the fastest growing economy because they had a change.
Mm-hmm.
Many of these countries which have had a change, there is no justification. They are not academically. You can't tell me that Nyasimbe is the most educated person in Togo. You can't tell me Kabila is the most educated. What are his qualifications? You can't tell me Seven is the most educated person or Kagame is the most educated person in Rwanda. Where did they get experience? They came from the bush. They had guns. They were not even the best academically. We know their academic record. They were not the best in university. They were not the best in primary school or secondary school. What justification do they have to sit on the country, whereas even the country don't seem to make progress? So I don't buy the idea that there is some support which they have. No, it is coercion. It is intimidation. It is manipulation. And if it is external, they are just foremen of some external forces which are misusing the countries.
I see. Well, for those just joining us, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you from the VOA studios here in Washington. Tonight, we're discussing elections in Africa, and our panelists are Mohammed Ademo, founder and editor-in-chief of opride.com. We have Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst. We also have Ayotunde Balogun of Channels TV in Lagos, who is with us here in studio in Washington. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga. Now, gentlemen, there are disparities when these things happen. You talk of intimidation, coercion, and all that in some elections. You talk of rigging and disputing the results. But then the pressure is different. Pressure being exerted on Jammeh and Gambia is different from pressure being that were exerted on people like Museveni, when the conditions you describe are almost similar or even worse. So let me begin with Mohammed. What dictates who should be condemned and who should be... We've seen elections which have been rigged or manipulated, and the international community say it was generally free and fair, or it was fair but not free, but it's okay, let's go ahead. What would determine that an election is fair?
Still talking about the external, that's the external influence I was really talking about. You know,
yes.
Because you can see it, it's not free, it's not fair.
Yes.
And then these people just say, well, you know, it's okay, it's
yes.
okay. I mean, it's the best we've seen so far. I mean,
yes.
You're not helping the system.
Yes. So, Mohammed, what's your take on that?
I think geopolitics, right? I mean, you look at Uganda, and Uganda contributes to soldiers to the fight against Al-Shabaab in Somalia, and has been an ally of Western powers for years. And you don't want to rock the boat too much because there's just a lot at stake, and there is also lack of trust for the opposition in some instances. For example, in countries like Ethiopia, the opposition is generally seen as weak and divided. So you get rid of the biggest guy that is holding the country together, like Kagame, the only person that supposedly guarantees Rwanda's stability going forward. And if he moves from there, there are concerns about stability. So I think generally geopolitics dictates these things. And also, you know, just look at the African Union. We don't have to always look externally. Within the continent itself, which countries and which leaders have influence with the membership, and all of these things are at play. But generally, I think what you see in the Gambia, in this case, is a government that is very unpopular, even by among its neighbors, you know, Senegal, in Nigeria, in Liberia. He's not very well liked. Uh-huh. And I think that added another element of criticism and another element to the conversation. Uh-huh. But, you know, also when you concede an election which everybody more or less expected that you are going to win, and you wait a week, 10 days and change your mind, it's just odd. I mean, it doesn't happen that way. You know, the elections are contested the same day. You raise flags about irregularities and inconsistencies and vote rigging the same day. You don't wait 10 days and weigh your options and change your mind. So I think the manner in which it happened had an impact, but geopolitics and obviously regional considerations had an impact. But generally, let me comment on something else I think that is happening in Africa. Today, more and more Africans, the electorate is more informed, a young population that is connected to each other and also to the outside world. And most people today have access to social media and other alternative media, and they know what elections look like. And they have, you know, they have wants and they have demands, and they want to have a stake in the future. In which countries are responsive to their demands, their questions, and which countries are going to accommodate. I think as cynical as sometimes we are as Africans about the state of affairs in our country, I think there is a positive trajectory here that young African electorates are not going to accept anything that they don't deserve much longer. And I think we are seeing that already, for example, with the sort of enthusiasm of the Gambian opposition to an extent in Ghana as well.
I see.
Can I just quickly add something there to that? Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, it's good to see the young Africans, you know, really stepping up. And you talked about the influence of the social media mm-hmm. and other alternative media that has really helped to shape, mm-hmm. you know, the minds of many of the youth, the younger generation in Africa. But you still find out that in most of these African countries, you know, those who get to become presidents or who have been in, you know, in positions of power for years mm-hmm. are already forgive me to use the word, nearing their graves. Yeah. I mean, these are men who are in their 60s, 70s, mm-hmm. and, you know, it doesn't appear the trend is slowing down. Mm-hmm. It just keeps going on. I mean, you can talk about in, like, 23 countries, like, from what I researched, and we have 54 countries in Africa, and mm-hmm. 23 already have presidents who are over 70 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, that speaks volumes as well.
Yes.
And, you know, until the younger generation begin to, you know, push, mm-hmm. you know, and advocate that, look, we also have something to offer. We're mm. the younger generation. And that is where the issue of mentoring, I think, should come in. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, because what good is it if you are a president or a leader mm. in that age and you cannot mentor even the younger generation, you know, to step up?
Yes.
You know, it's just a yes. sit-tight mm. attitude which, you know, we really have to change. It must stop.
Talking of mentoring, let's look a little bit ahead. Yeah. In elections which are...
I completely agree, but let me just say that I think the more interesting thing to me is that in Western democracies, if you look, young people are apathetic and they don't want any part in politics. They don't want to be involved. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Africans, for example, you are in Senegal, and in the last elections, you know, the youth just came out in large numbers in the musical groups, in the rap. I think Yenamar was it called. They were very active in this, and you see that in Burkina Faso, in DRC, young people really interested, really passionate about politics. I think it will take obviously time and changes slow, but I'm very optimistic that when we do get there, we need education, which has a quality. We need exposure to other places. We need to learn from experiences of other countries. We need mentorship. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, some of these leaders forget about mentoring the young upcoming leadership, but they don't even allow them to be to voice their opposition. And they are not nurturing. The environment is not enabling. But there is hope.
One good example for my colleagues is that when you talk of mentoring, some of them even don't even contemplate about it. A man like Museven, he appointed his wife minister. Actually, he's mentoring his wife, who is almost the same age, with lesser qualification. He's appointing him minister. Now the next in line is his son to follow into the likes of Gabon, of Bongo, the likes of Nyasimbe, the likes of Kabila. So it is a terrible situation which we are in. But the net effect is that whoever is supporting these dinosaurs on the continent, whether internal or externally, the net effect is that the more you allow him, he does what he wants. For example, Museven, having had a civil war where he almost wiped out 1.5 million people, he is still killing more. Mm-hmm. Recently, just a few weeks ago, he attacked one of the smallest kingdoms in the country, and about 100 people with the pangas mm-hmm. and the knives were slaughtered with the almost helicopter gunships.
Yeah.
So he continues killing the way he wants, mm-hmm. and now the other effect is that the cancer spreads into the region and the continent. Because Museven is supported by the U.S. and other people, because he's a foreman, as you have said, sending soldiers to Somalia and Darfur and elsewhere. Now, he does what he wants. That affects the whole region. What comes up? South Sudan becomes ungovernable. Mm-hmm. Burundi becomes ungovernable. Central African Republic becomes ungovernable. Congo becomes ungovernable. DRC becomes ungovernable.
List is endless.
In the wrong run, even the whole world spends more on UN forces and humanitarian help in the region than it would have done had it had proper governance in the region. That is why we have to credit the West African countries, because they have realized in ECOWAS that one rotten tomato will affect the whole area. So it is better to tackle it so that they can reduce the number, because the more they get more well organized, the more the region becomes settled. After Ivory Coast, after Sierra Leone, after Liberia, all those countries are settling. So right now on the continent, West Africa is more settled, leave alone the terrorism which is attacking them. But politically, it is more settled, and it is in a better direction than East and Central Africa.
I see. Talking of West Africa, in 2017, the elections in Senegal, Sierra Leone, Liberia and Guinea in West Africa. There are two in East Africa, Kenya and Rwanda. Just a quiz. We're ending by a quiz. Who would you think, whose results are already known among those five I've mentioned?
I think Kenya.
Okay. How about you, Mohammed? Whose results are predetermined?
Kenya, I would say.
How about you, Suleiman?
Rwanda, there is no election. You don't call that. Those are mock elections, like in Uganda, in Guinea. In Rwanda, those are mock elections. In Kenya, there will be a contestation, and we believe Kenya wants to follow the lines of Sierra Leone and Ghana and Nigeria. For Rwanda, of course, that is the normal mock elections.
All right, gentlemen, we shall keep looking out for those. That's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Mohammed Ademo, founder and editor-in-chief of Opright.com. We also have Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa, and my colleague here, Ayotunde Balogun of Channels TV Lagos. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
A pleasure.
Yes, and that's all.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And that's what we had tonight. And we'll be back again next week with another edition for Reporters Roundtable. Thanks very much for tuning in. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington.